I walk into a medical office, everywhere feels off limits except wherever they lead me. And I think in dental, it's in any field, I think just letting the patient know, here's where the bathroom is. If you need water, here's where this is. Like, you're allowed behind this door. Go ahead. This is where the bathroom is, instead of them feeling like very permission-based everything and sit in your spot and fill out your forms. Just orienting to that environment is more than most medical offices do. And it's just low-hanging fruit. Be a person. And I think people just notice that stuff, you know?
This is Growth in Dentistry, a dental intelligence podcast where we ask the question, what does growth in dentistry look like to you? I'm Katie Polson, a dental hygienist and your host.
Welcome to a special episode of Growth in Dentistry for our Practice Growth series. I'm Katie Polson.
And I'm Adam Smith.
And today we have a very special one because we have a DSO or enterprise group. I don't know, guys, I'm the worst at this. I'm always at enterprise because I'm like, I worked just in a small little tiny location. So I don't ever know. It's like a whole nother world that I don't understand, but I'm excited to get into it because it's going to be really awesome.
Plus we do have a starship.
You have a starship.
That's a starship enterprise.
Oh yes. Yes. I know. That's what it reminds me of every time I say it. That's why I say DSO, but I know that doesn't relate to everybody. That cute time, that amazing, not cute, that strong, amazing voice. Is Brad Nelson, CEO of Positive Impact Dental. And we'll get to him, we'll have him introduce himself in just a minute. But before we get started, I want to welcome those new listeners that we have to the show. If this is your first time listening, so glad to have you. We've got really great content here with our practice deep dive series, but we also have regular episodes where we get into just best practices in 30 minutes of on a specific topic. Make sure you check those episodes out. And then we also have DSO specific episodes as well. So a lot to offer, a lot of shows for you to catch up on. If you are a fan of Facebook, I don't know, Meta, is that what we're calling it now? Anyway, if you want to be there and it's a place where you like to be, come join us in our Facebook Dental Intelligence Podcast community. And if you are a active listener of the show, thank you so much. If you wouldn't mind going and rating and review this podcast, it helps us expand our ability to outreach to other people who are also dentists and data nerds just like us. So would be glad to be able to have you do that. And then the last thing that we would talk about is that if you are not a customer of Dental Intelligence and you want to be, or you want to see what it would do for your practice, we would invite you to go to get.dentalintel.net/podcast. And we are giving $50 to those listeners of our show when you complete a demo. So if you will go to that website, we'll make sure that that link gets put on our show notes at the end. So you can also link from there. So without further ado, welcome Brad to the show. So glad to have you.
Hey guys. Yeah, I'm glad to be here and chat.
Yeah, he's a busy guy. He's just getting his nature time right now outside. So. he's grown a lot. So tell us a little bit about yourself, how you landed in dentistry, and then why Positive Impact? Why did you want to get into the DSO space?
I mean, most of my dental past, I'm not a dentist, so all of my dental experience came from being a patient with my mouth open. Mm-hmm. My father-in-law's a dentist, and so I had to do that intentionally because I needed a lot of dental work, so it worked out. So he was always, you know, he was my dentist. And anyway, when a friend of mine, Lauren Israelson, who were business partners in our group here, Positive Impact Dental, he and I grew up together. We met in eighth grade and worked together through college. He went to dental school, and I decided to take a sabbatical with my family, and we moved to Hawaii for a few years. When we came back, it was right as Lauren was graduating dental school. And during dental school, you know, he could tell his whole own story at some point potentially, but he, dreamed up starting Positive Impact Dental and had everything ready. He just, you know, he knew that he wanted to build a group and to have a broader impact than one practice after he graduated. And so we reconnected. We had always stayed in touch, but he said, "Hey, do you want to meet up in Oklahoma and do this with me?" And so I showed up a few weeks after he bought his first practice and just started really figuring out what do we need to do to be able to grow. We both, you know, we get along well, and we're friends and business partners. And thankfully, you know, that I think that relationship has catalyzed our growth as a group. And we've been aligned on vision and goals. And so all of our energy has just gone into growing as quickly and as well as we possibly can. And thankfully we've collected a lot of good people along the way that have helped make it happen. And, so we've been going for about 4 years now, and just, you know, continuing on from here. Sometimes I feel like we're just barely getting going. It's been a crazy few years.
I bet that's a big leap of faith to just go and just move your family to Oklahoma and just start this experience with the idea. Why did you want to get into the group dentistry space? Like what pulled you to it, I guess? Cause that is, you went from living in Hawaii to providing dental care.
So I don't know, to me, it's either a blessing or a curse. I think I've figured out how to turn it more into a blessing when it used to be a curse. Is I'm just deeply interested in pretty much everything. And so it's very hard to choose what to do, because I love all of it. I'm very interested and passionate about health. I spent a lot of the years that I lived in Hawaii researching and learning and, you know, learning about human health and my own health and lifestyle and holistic health. And so being in healthcare and figuring out, you know, not just the clinical side of how do you help people get healthier, but what about all the rest? Because a lot of it isn't clinical. A lot of it's, you know, behavioral, mental, emotional, environmental. And so I think for me coming into this, the fact that it's healthcare and helping patients improve their health and trying to impact as many patients as possible is exciting to me. But it's also, how do you organize people in a way to actually make that happen? How do you execute? And that's where the business side comes in. That's where the vision comes in, and being able to lead and organize people and teams and find people with different strengths and assemble them to make something happen. And really just figure out, what does dental consolidation look like? There's a lot of stigma around it. And there, I think it's, some of that's breaking up a little, but there, you know, I know even 4 years ago, it was different. There was a very big divide between corporate and private. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I've almost felt this, like, I just don't see division. I don't see division between people. I think it's a big world. There's a lot of opportunity. I think there's room for all of it. And so I think as the dental industry is consolidating, to me, it's an exciting time of opportunity to help impact the way that all shakes out. Like, you know, dentists do need support. It's a crazy, complicated world, way different than when my father-in-law came out of dental school, with far less debt and easier to get patients. And it just, to me, I think we kind of over emotionalize, like the whether it's the solopreneur or the solo doctor, or everyone wants to be their own person and do it by themselves. I just think it's way more fun and way more interesting trying to bring those people together and figure out how do we do this together in a good way. And we don't need to, you know, have conflict where I don't think any really exists. So I don't know. That's like a really rambly answer. It kind of is. That is my answer. It's like, I love all of it. I love the action. I love the team building and the people side. I love seeing these practices where acquisition model, I love leading them through change and trying to pass the baton on something that was obviously working, and try and bring these practices into the next generation. Like, we see so many of them just close down, whether it's through COVID or economic times. And so if we can help continue what was already happening and just add our piece to it, then I don't know, I kind of see that bigger picture. And that's what gives meaning to some of the stress and strain of the day-to-day work, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love what you said there, and it makes me appreciate the reason why you named it Positive Impact now. Like, it makes sense why there's that name of that group, because it really, and I felt it as a hygienist in a solo practice. My dad was a dentist, right? Grew up, he put a sign outside of his building, and that was it. That's how we got patients. And we just don't live in that world anymore. And I love that we've got groups like you out there that are trying to change and shake up that narrative that really probably shouldn't exist. So it's really awesome. Really glad to have you on. So we were able to, part of the reason and the, I guess the idea with these deeper dive episodes is to really do a deep dive into how the workings of a practice or the workings of a group and figuring out like what makes this data that we're seeing actually, how does it work? Data tells a story. What is that story? Right. So, tell us a little bit about, before we get into it, the growth that you guys have had in the last year, where you guys came from, how many practices you've bought. It'll kind of help kind of frame up like what we're going to get into.
Yeah. So we started in July of 2018 with one practice, and we currently have completed 23 acquisitions. 8 of them have been mergers. And so we have 15 locations currently and on track to probably, you know, continue the growth here over the next year or so, potentially doubling again. But just for context, we had barely closed on our 4th practice when COVID hit. And so it was an intense time. So we closed on our 4th when COVID hit. And then as of last September, we acquired our 9th practice. So we've doubled over the last year, since last September.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot of growth for 1 year. That's a lot of growth for 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really cool. And so keeping in mind that growth that you've had in just 1 year, and the scaling that you guys are doing, on an average across all of your locations, from 2021 to 2022, and some practices are doing much better than others, but even still, it shows a 2% increase in your active patient base. And so for those of you that kind of aren't in the numbers and listening, that means that the patients, you're bringing in new patients, and even the patients that are still there when you're purchasing the practices, they're staying, and then you're also able to grow, whether it's by recapturing patients that have been on the books and they haven't been coming in, or you're, you know, gaining new patients and they're staying for the future. So it's a lot of growth. And it's really a testament to like your system and how you guys do things. Because I can imagine if you're seeing a dentist and it gets bought up by somebody that you don't know, you would probably see the opposite of what we're seeing in the data. So I'm excited to get into the systems a little bit about and tell us a little bit about that. What do you think, first off, what do you think that, why do you think it's showing up across all of those locations? What can you attribute it to? I'm sure it's multiple things, but.
Yeah, there's a few things there. I think as a group, well, depending on, I guess, who the audience is, right? Because if someone's looking to grow a group, you know, my answer might be different than if someone just has a practice and they're talking about systems. So I guess to hit a couple of things, as a group, our goal is not to micromanage the practice, it's to support. And so I think the 80-20 rule comes into play, you know, which is, you know, the 20% of your most effective efforts are responsible for 80% of your results. There's a lot of ways you could explain the 80-20 rule. But basically, if we as a group can hit that critical 20% and then allow and facilitate and support the practice to fill that gap on that last 20, because that last 20% is actually the hardest and most important part. It's the 80 that we don't want them worrying about or thinking about. We don't want them to worry about if their phone's routing to the right place. We don't want them thinking about if the Google My Business is up to date. Like, we can hit all that low hanging fruit that kind of gets you the 80%, at least makes you show up on the map. If we're talking about new patients, we can send the mail out and let them know of the transition and make sure that that letter is really inviting and welcoming, and have a good handoff between the doctor who's either retiring, or maybe it's just a name change. basically, as a group, we want to facilitate those pieces to allow the people in the practice to focus on the patient experience, allow them to, focus on a few key items that are going to fill that last 20% where people really notice, you know. And so I think that would probably be my broad answer across all of our processes and systems. We're not trying to dial in and perfect everything as a group, because we want there to be room to innovate and adapt and cater to the patients of each practice, because they have different demographics, they're different age of, you know, the building is in a different location or in a different condition. They're not all like top of the line, shiny, brand new practices, you know? And so that also is one of the main things we do, is we'll update the facility, we'll do paint, flooring, and add TVs and technology in. But ultimately, I think it's hit that critical 20%, and then make sure that our processes and systems and communication are such that it allows the practice to adapt and serve the patient, you know?
Yeah.
As far as numbers go, Brad, what percentage of your owners stay with your group, and what percent leave? Just to give some perspective on that 2%, right? Because usually when an owner leaves in a transition, you'll lose more than when the owner stays. Mm. But what's that been with your group?
A majority of our doctors will want to retire within, I'd say a majority is they're ready to retire within 0 days to 1 year.
Okay.
We do have a few that they've got 3 to 5 years left that they're looking to work, and they just want to focus on their patients and being a clinician. So we'll come in and help make sure that practice is ready to transition when they're ready to retire. And in the meantime, we try to pull some basic levers and get things off of their plate, but really just kind of stay out of their way while they continue to work with those patients. But a vast majority of the doctors are looking, they're partnering with us because they're wanting to retire soon. Okay.
Yeah. So maintaining a growing patient base while doubling your practice locations and losing several of those doctors within that year, like you're saying, mm-hmm. that's a big accomplishment.
Yeah.
So that speaks to both new patient acquisition and retention, like Katie mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So that's phenomenal across 15 locations.
Yeah. How, I guess, I mean, are there staff staying? Are for majority of mm-hmm. them?
Oh. We want to retain, we always, the priority and the preference is always to retain the team. It obviously it's their choice too, but we try to transition for our group, like change management and working with doctors, teams, and patients through a change. That's basically our business model. And so if our people here, like the people that we bring on, need to have that social awareness, emotional intelligence, patience, because we could just slap an operations manual in there and tell them good luck, and this is the way things are now. But patient retention and staff retention are a priority to us. So, I mean, if we want to get more specific, when we have a transition coming up, we do a welcome meeting with the team way before it's official. We want them to know who's coming in. We don't want it to be a surprise on day one. We want as little as possible to change on day one as possible. Usually it's just a new credit card machine and swap out some info in the practice management system, and that is it. Like we're not coming in with all new everything, new processes and checklists and all this stuff on day one. It's a process of what that practice needs. And it also depends on what the doctor's goals are who sold their practice to us. There is a customized transition, but I think ultimately it boils down to just really transparent, positive communication and framing with the team and with the patients. So we do a welcome meeting with the team because they're the ones that have those relationships with the patients. And so a lot of these, Adam, you were saying, there's probably a lot of good systems in place, while we're scaling an organization, plus keeping these practices not only, retained, but growing. A lot of the systems are, any coach will tell you a person is not a system. So mm-hmm. don't tell any consultant or coach that I'm going to say this, but the critical 20% on the transition is the people. It's not the system. Mm-hmm. It's the people. And so if we can get a good relationship with these teams, they are going to help lead these patients through a transition. They're going to be the one advocating for the new doctor and reassuring mm-hmm. them, hey, I'm still here. This is good. You should give these people a chance. I know them. You know, they've been working with us for months. It's a lot of that reassuring to patients that our goal is to improve patient care, not just run people through. And so, you know, we're adding in intraoral cameras, putting TVs in all the operatories so that they can see their own imaging, whether it's x-rays with the doctor or just intraoral imaging, which most of them have never seen a close-up color picture of their tooth. And so adding in technology, that also helps bridge the gap because it's something new and interesting that the patients haven't seen before, and helps them know that, like, we are there to improve patient care. And a lot of our processes and systems are geared toward transparency to the patient, you know, financial transparency, billing transparency. We want all that stuff to be way more clear on all of those things, get full breakdowns. Like, a lot of them, you know, a lot of these practices don't have the staffing or bandwidth to do full insurance breakdowns on their patients. So then the office gets a bad rap and the patient's annoyed. If we can get all that information, it's something easy that obviously everyone would just hope is the case. So anyway, I think those are a lot of the processes, like having a good patient letter, having a good relationship with the team, thinking through that transition. And then, you know, I like it, me just thinking through it as a patient is like, when I walk into a medical office, everywhere feels off limits except wherever they lead me. And I think in dental, it's in any field, I think just letting the patient know, here's where the bathroom is. If you need water, here's where this is. Like, you're allowed behind this door. Go ahead. This is where the bathroom is. Instead of them feeling like very permission-based everything and sit mm-hmm. in your spot and fill out your forms. Just orienting to that environment is more than most medical offices do. And it's just low hanging fruit, be a person. And I think people just notice that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
That's really interesting. You know, you mentioned the 80-20, right? That you've got systems, but that the critical 20% is the people. And I think that's the missing piece that used to create the divide between DSOs and single location solopreneurs, right? Is I'm not going to join a DSO because then I have to do all of the things exactly like this, right? They come in, they drop all their systems on us, and we're 100% part of that DSO. And that's kind of the mode of operation that these DSOs used to take. And so, you know, you mentioned your goal was to kind of bridge that divide, and it sounds like you found a really good way to do it. And that the numbers are showing exactly that, you know, your staff is wanting to stay, your patients are wanting to stay, because you're creating a situation where you're enhancing the systems and giving them the tools and letting them use those tools to be the people that they are, rather than like be a cog in a system. So,
yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I love before we move on, I love that you talked about transparency. I think that is probably a pretty key aspect of this is transparency to the team and when you're purchasing them, but also to the patients. I mean, it's very nerve-wracking to have a dentist that you've seen your entire life retire and somebody new comes in. You know, if they're completely transparent on how my insurance is going to work, how my billing is going to work, that the office is going to be the same or whatever it is. I love that you use that term, because I think that goes a long way for sure. So, okay. So let's get into data, because that's what we do here, Dental Intel.
No, you guys are so nerdy.
I know.
Oh, all right. Let's do it. Make it quick.
I know, but really, like, every time I walk around at work here in Dental Intelligence, I'm like, it's a tech company and it's a data tech company. So there's a bunch of nerds here.
Yeah, there are. Yeah.
Okay. So, and this might seem totally completely obvious and like kind of dumb to a chief operating officer, but it probably isn't for some of the listeners. So how does data help you lead your teams? Because obviously you're doing this, you're getting them set up, you're using transparency, but how do you use data to do that? And what does that, how do you use data to grow your practices?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, people want to do the right thing, right? Like I think there's so many moving pieces. Dentistry is extremely complex, especially right now while the tools are still in a lot of, like, Dental Intel. I think, you know, you guys have done a lot to help. You're trying to improve the tools. You're trying to bring more under one roof, which is why we use you guys, and it's been awesome. And so I think the tools and the data information, if people have those available, then most people want to do the right thing. Most people want to be part of something that's doing a good job, you know. And if they don't, like, most people want to be somewhere where you're like, hey, I'm doing something good here. I'm doing something cool. My efforts matter. Our practice is growing. Our, you know, most people, even if they're not an owner, most people don't want to work for a shrinking practice. They want to work for a growing practice. And so I think a lot of it is just freeing people up to help them know what the priority is, and then free them up to pursue that. And, you know, you can take a carrot and a stick approach to it. Like, but I think just giving the right tools and more information creates more of that carrot where you're like, hey guys, look, how do these metrics and numbers apply? You know, that's another thing, you know, DSOs or groups or corporate or whatever you want to call it are notorious for. Oh, it's all about the numbers. And I think a number is just a reflection of some other reality. You know, a dollar is a reflection of how much is in your bank account, or, you know, a number is how many kids I have. You know, the number is just reflecting some underlying reality. And I think the failure on the whole numbers versus people thing has been just the failure to connect those dots on how do the numbers connect to people. Mm-hmm. And I know when we've had you guys, like when Steve, you know, from Dental Intel has come and presented, that's been his main thing is, hey, let me show you the people behind the numbers. And I think making the numbers people centric is what helps get buy-in with teams and also lets them know why this stuff matters. So, you know, an easy example, you know, hygiene recall or, you know, new patient numbers. The team wants those numbers to go up. Like they want, I think they just don't either know how to get the report, or the reporting is tedious, or they're calling someone that's already been called three times and now we're bugging them. Like, oh, I called that patient and they said, quit calling. How was I supposed to know? Because so-and-so forgot to clear them off the list. If there's a good tool, which for instance, you know, the Dental Intel follow-ups, you know, you can pre-populate that, and our teams, we can just give them a number of follow-ups to make, and they track them, and we can reward good performance. We can see that it's actually happening. But if I ever need a tool or a system to babysit, then that's like the worst reason I need it. I don't want it to babysit. I want it to be there for clarity for that team member so that they know what matters in their job and how they can contribute to the growth of the practice. So I probably lost your question. Like,
no, you didn't.
On my answer.
No.
But basically that's the answer. It's like, how do we help the people know why we're looking at these numbers? How do these relate to patient care? And what can you do as a team member to actually, you showing up to work today actually matters on this number, and it matters to those patients. And I think just having good tools and information help facilitate that. Sometimes they feel like the reporting, well, that's why we want it. We don't want reporting for the sake of reporting or a dashboard for the sake of a dashboard. It's like, what behavior is this supposed to be tied to? And how do we help them see that whole chain, yes, rather than just getting caught on the fact that they're looking at a bar graph, you know?
Yeah. I love that answer. I'm sure you want to dive into, Adam, but like, that is why I'm here at Dental Intelligence as a hygienist here, working here at Dental Intelligence, is because I think once you capture that, like, the number is not my babysitter. The number is not telling me that I need to work this hard. The number is making it so that I have the opportunity to see like what impact I'm actually making in this practice. And it's so powerful as a team member, as a provider, as a COO, like all of it is applicable to whatever role you are in the practice. Yeah.
Well, what you just described, Brad, we've seen in a lot of these deep dive episodes, which are, we're doing these deep dives with some of our top performing practices. And what I've noticed is that they really have this like nucleus that they've established of, our goal is to provide the best dental care possible to as many people as possible. And we make decisions with data based on that North Star goal, right? But the data is telling us how we're doing with that. the minute that we make a decision that is not in line with that North Star goal, the data becomes something that's used to manipulate someone rather than just tell them how they're doing in accomplishing the goal that they probably, as a provider or an employee in a practice, already have, right? And you brought that up as it's not a babysitter. It's really just giving us, how are we doing with doing what we're already wanting to do, and what can we do better? So when you use data in that way, and you look at reappointment percentage as, you know, we want these people in our practice, in a practice, and specifically ours, because we're going to provide great care to them. And if they're not in our practice, we don't know that they're in another practice. I was on a vacation this last weekend, and one of my friends who I know has really good insurance, has plenty of money to pay for dental care, said, I haven't been to the dentist in a year and a half. And I said, why? He said, because I haven't gotten around to scheduling, right? But that's someone that has no excuse not to be at the dentist. But that number, that data would show, hey, we should let Nick, is his name, know that he needs to have an appointment.
Nick, go to the dentist.
You just got, right. Dude, you just got called out, show,
but
millions of people are going to hear this, dude.
I know.
Yeah. It's I didn't say last names.
I know, and I'm just kidding
he probably has bad breath by now.
Probably. I'm going to tell him you said,
dude,
that.
Dude, Nick. Yeah. Oh, he'll hear it.
Yeah. Probably won't, but... Well, I love that you tied the two together. And I think when people can make that bridge, that it becomes, the data becomes empowering to accomplishing that main goal.
Yeah. And it obviously shows, like, for those that are like, so your hygiene reappointment percentage across all locations in average is over 90%, which is like, that's in our top 10% of our like S&P, like our solo practices. So that means that all of your practices are an average of over 90%, which is incredible. Like that tells me that, like, I mean, as a hygienist, like, they have bought in to why it's important to get them back on the schedule before they leave. So, I mean, I don't know if there's anything specific that are there being taught to get that, but what do you attribute that, I guess, beyond what we've already talked about?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say we have like a perfect system by any means, right? What I would say is, if you have to convince someone like on your team or in your practice that having good hygiene reappointment rate is important, like, you're not going to win that battle. Like, they either care or they don't care, you know. And you can try, you can educate them, and maybe they're like, oh, I see why that connects to literally everything else in our practice, and now I'm on board. But I don't know, there's a lot of, you know, people care if you have the right people. So again, there's your critical 20, right? If you have the right people and you give them the right tools and you talk about it, and then it's just going to trend upward. You know, you know, we don't have any whip cracking on that. We have encouragement. Like, we have, hey, what's up? We have visibility. Like, we look at Dental Intel, they do weekly reporting. We do have we have team bonuses. We want our teams and our managers to be incentivized when the practice does well. Like, we want them to do well. Like, they work really hard. Like, we're not the easiest people to work for. Like, if people want the easiest dental job, like, we're not it, because we're usually working on a practice that's in transition. These patients need more conversation. They need more reassurance. The team needs more reassurance. Like, or they're new and they came in, we hired them, and they come into a transitioning office. And so I would say, like, any lack in system and like some perfect criteria and enforcement is just having the right people and being really clear that, like, this is the main way that we grow and preserve our practice. And I think, you know, if you have the right people, they generally care about that.
Yeah. And this isn't something we talked about before, but I think it's definitely on the minds of almost every dental practice out there. And you've said, like, if you have the right people, so what is the hiring process? How do you get those right people to work for you? 'Cause that's tricky.
Yeah, it definitely is tricky. Yeah.
I love it.
Let's see. So what's the hiring process?
Well,
So we do have core values, mm-hmm. that we really mean. And, you know, that's been one of my things. As soon as one of our coaches was like, you guys need core values. I was like, oh, it sounds like a bunch of corporate BS, you know, and they're like, no, these are important. Let me explain. And I agree, obviously, we should have values. I have values, you know, but turning them into that, I'm just like very averse to lip service-y
yeah.
stuff. And so I was resistant at first, but when we create our values, you know, which are, again, they seem generic on the surface, but we dive into them more with our team, you know, patients mm-hmm. first, which we tie that to scheduling and attendance and, you know, putting the patient's needs above your own convenience. So they're not just fluffy, like they have behavioral ramifications, but patients first, love your people, you know, your patients, your team, each other, being resourceful and resilient, seeing change and challenges as an opportunity for growth is under resourceful and resilient, which obviously that shows up in a group that transitions dental practices, and then continual improvement. So we have those four core values, and we're very specific when we're hiring and we talk through them. And if I can get the sense that someone isn't really bought into those, or they can't adopt that vision, and it's just a job, or it's convenience, or it's what's in this for me, like there does need to be something in it for them, as long as once that's met, they're there for the patient, not them, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I think just having very frequent, candid, open conversations. And we try to just, you know, do our best to maintain a really high level of rapport with our people and resolve issues quickly so that we prove ourselves to them. And then, you know, we hope the same back from them. So I don't know, my interviewing process is very more like conversational rather than rigid. I think just screening for those values and being really clear on what we want them to bring to the practice, right? Like I'm not going to tell a hygienist that, yeah, they have 8 1-hour appointments and that's exactly how it goes every day. Sometimes there's, you know, more SRP than they would prefer, or it's a lot more work, but I know that beforehand. And so I want them to know what they're coming into, because I don't want that initial turnover. I want them to know that what they're coming into as transparently as possible. And so I'll be overly transparent, which to me is just transparent. I'll be transparent in the interviews because I don't want them to show up on day one or day three or day 10 and say, this isn't what you told me. You know, and so a lot of it is, hey, we do have a culture here and we have our values, but I'm looking for culture builders, not culture recipients. Like a culture is only a culture when we're all doing it. And this is how that looks when it comes to patient care. This is how it looks when we're a team. And so I am promising them something, but I'm also asking for that same thing in return. And I want them to have investment and accountability more than just show up, you know?
Yeah.
That was about data, right?
No, I didn't have to be that. Yeah.
So culture good. Builders rather than culture recipients.
I just wrote that down. I love that. Wow. It really, the word, and especially with me, like interviewing key opinion leaders all the time on this show, the word culture is just like this like buzzword that like just goes over people's head at this point, because people just don't, it's just something that everyone thinks that they have like the like magic pill for.
It's not fluffy. If it's real culture, it's not fluffy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But you nailed it though, that you can't hire people that are looking for a good culture to be the recipient of that good mm-hmm. culture. Right. That's someone who will detract from that culture. The culture builder, I love that. And my question is, we all know it's not easy to hire right now. Do you ever get to a point where looking for the right person hinders what you could do in a practice because you're trying to find that right person, right? You need to fill a spot, but you can't fill it fast enough because you want to fill it with the right person. I feel like a lot of dentists just kind of, well, you'll do for now, right?
Yeah. Warm bodies in chairs. Yeah.
Do they have a pulse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we're not perfect at any of this, right? But what's the cost of picking the wrong person? And then you wait too long to let them go and it impacts your whole team. your team's telling you they're not a fit, they're not the right person. And so I think, you know, what's the hidden intangible cost of making a wrong hire? I'd rather wait another week or 2 weeks, or I'd rather, we also pay more, you know. I mean, we had our review with our benefits broker the other day, and he said, you know, our pay is on average higher than what they normally see. And I want that to be the case. Like, I want to pay, like, it's a hard time in the world. There's inflation, there's all this stuff going on. And so I think maybe being willing to pay a little bit more, but then also have those expectations, you know, like, hey, I'll pay you more. I'll pay you a dollar or two more than market rate, or I'm going to make this, I really want this person. I'm going to offer them a little more on this or that, but I'm going to make sure that we're totally on the same page with what needs to come out of that. Cause it's like, if the math works, and again, here we go with numbers, but if the math works, then we could pay people more because they would be contributing and being productive and really bought in and helping build the vision that we have for our practices. They'd support, you know, the patients, their doctors, they'd work together as a team. And so I think, you know, if it's ultimately there is a number where you could hire someone, right? Sometimes it just seems impossible, but it's like, what would their role have to look like? And what would their morale and attitude have to look like to make sense at this number, rather than just, we can't pay that, that's crazy. Like, ultimately, you're right. Like, the cost of not having that person over the long term is very high. Maybe you bump that budget up a little, but make sure that you're on the same page that those expectations are going to be there. And then they know that, and they're going to be a more highly retained person. And, you know, they at least told you on the upfront that they're bought into developing and growing into what they need to be for that practice.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. Sorry, Katie.
You're good. Go.
I was talking with a dentist that I'm good friends with, and used to own a single doc location. Now works in a group practice, and he said, "I can't imagine paying people in that single doc location what I'm paying them to do the jobs that they're doing now. But I also can't tell you how much easier my life is and how much better the practice runs because we do invest in them." He said, "I wouldn't even consider cutting anyone's pay or replacing them with anyone that is paid less that was operating at the same level, because," he said, "all I have to do literally is show up, do the dentistry, and go home." He says, "We pay them a lot, but my life is so much easier now." And there's three docs in his new location. So that's the same for all of us. Like, they have people doing things because they pay more.
Yeah. Adam, what I would say, like, we're as a growing company, like, we're always in a position where, man, I wish we had way more people, or I wish, you know, sometimes I wish I could pay some of the people I had more. Like, it is, like, there are those trade-offs and tricky things. And so what I would say to someone who knows they need someone, like, they know they need someone, but they feel like they can't either a budget or afford that person, is get more creative and give the right person the right shot. For instance, maybe there's someone that really wants an opportunity to grow. It's not just about the dollar number, or maybe it's like, I need this person and I need them to be able to do X, Y, Z. If it's the right person for the right situation, like, everyone won't say yes to it, but the right one would, right? Like, for instance, you could get creative and have a growth plan or an incentive structure. And it's like, hey, maybe I can't afford to pay X over this next 3 or 6 months, but if we can get where I think we'll go, if I have you, you know, here's how I can get you there. And then, you know, like, they're willing to say, yeah, I'll take a little less for the first 90 days, or I'll take less for 6 months, or I'm willing to have some of this be performance based. If they're not, that's totally fine. You just have to find somewhere else, and you need someone else that fits the reality that your business is in. And so sometimes I think we're not accurately being honest with what the reality that our business or our practice is in, and then getting creative within those parameters. You know, let's say I can grow into that. What's a creative deal? Oh, well, no one will take that. Well, maybe someone will, maybe the right person will. And in fact, maybe that's critical to them. They'd rather have some performance-based metric or grow something. There are creative ways to to grow into those people when you feel like you can't afford them. But I do agree that just leaving vacancies in staffing for a long time is way more costly than just stretching or coughing up a little extra to just make that problem go away.
Yeah.
I like that, getting creative with it. I think in a lot of the dental groups that I'm part of, I see like, you know, what are you paying hygienists? I can't hire anyone. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, those types of, along those lines. And yeah, I think if people just kind of said, hey, this is what my ideal situation is with this person in this role, and this is what it would do for my practice, and got creative with it, I think that you'd be able to solve a lot of that and get your practice moving forward. So I really like that.
And just to like bring, I guess, full circle back to numbers, is like, if you don't know where, you don't know how, you won't know how to get creative if you don't know where you are currently, right? And so if you don't have the right reporting or metrics or whatever you need, get it so that you can make those decisions on maybe we move to a collections-based format to pay your hygienists, right? Like, what does that look like? How much would that be? You know, but and move forward from there, because it,
have to give them, and I think sometimes we want, you know, as a you know, when you're hiring someone, you want them to figure all that stuff out, or you want them to solve a certain problem. I think we've got to at least know what measurable item we're asking someone to move the needle on, especially if you're trying to get creative with them. It does need to be like, you have to counteract that ambiguity of, you know, maybe you don't know exactly how much you're being paid or what your role looks like in 3 or 6 or 9 months, but here is the clarity. These are the numbers that we've got to move. You know, these are the metrics or numbers we need to move, and here's how can I support you in moving those to get to whatever that is. So it's like you mm-hmm. have to have the measurables so you have some clarity, especially if you're going to get kind of creative and ambiguous on a role or a position.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, we didn't plan on talking about hiring, but I'm really, really glad we did, because
that's awesome.
It's like the number one thing that everybody wants to talk about right now. And it's for good reason. I mean, it's really hard when you feel like you can't either get the right people, or when you do hire them and they're not promised, they don't fulfill what you actually needed. So I love that, getting clear on, you know, financially where you can be to pay them, and also getting clear on like what you actually would want. It's really cool. Okay. Well, we're almost out of time here, and I want to ask you the question that we ask everybody that comes on this show. And to you, it's going to be something different, because you are mid growth, like laser focused on growth. So what does growth in dentistry look like to you?
Oh, that's a broad question.
It is.
What does growth in dentistry mean?
It can be personally, or what is growth to positive impact right now?
So I guess I would go back to what my intro question was on how I got into all this. And to me, growth in dentistry is breaking down just barriers and conflict in the industry, mm-hmm. not necessarily outright conflict, but probably sometimes too. But I think our path forward in dentistry to make a good, I don't know, I call it conscious consolidation. You know, like, how do we thoughtfully, this market is consolidating. There's no doubt about it. And it's happening with or without any individual group or person. So to me, how do we, and maybe it sounds like kumbaya, we do have a fire pit here, but it's like, how do we work better together, you know, between groups and vendors that are trying to solve some of these problems with those tools, whether it's between solo doc offices and groups, even in the local market. I don't know. To me, growth in dentistry is just breaking down some of these barriers and just everyone realizing that there isn't inherent conflict, and we're all trying to make this industry, keep it good and make it better. And it's evolving, and I think we just need to stay flexible and adaptable to that.
I love it. Keep it good and make it better. That's a good quote there. Well, Brad, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been a pleasure. It really has. Yeah.
Chat for a minute.
Yeah, I love it. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, reach out. If they want to sell their practice to you. No, I'm just kidding.
Sure.
Yeah. How can they reach you?
We're exploring any opportunity. Yeah, I can give you my cell phone and email address.
Okay.
And you can post it. I'm happy to chat with anyone. Like I say, to me, this is all, it's all just the fun adventure that we're all doing right now. So let's all chat about it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a good,
yep,
good
yep.
chat. Are you on right now?
Yeah, go ahead and say it for those that are listening, and then I will link it also in the show notes.
Sure. Cell number 405-240-9896.
Okay.
And my email is just brad@positiveimpactdental.org.
Hey, this has been Growth in Dentistry, a Dental Intelligence Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to our marketing department for all their work on this podcast. I'm Katie Poulsen. Keep growing.